Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, July 22nd, 2018. This is episode 1508. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Simply Safe. Protect your home and family with an A-plus home security system. To learn more about Simply Safe today, visit simplysafe.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. That's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech, computers and the internet and, you know, all that jazz. Smartphones, yeah, we talk a lot about that. Smart watches, all the rigmarole, all the things with chips in them, the things that are changing our lives, sometimes for the best, sometimes for the worst. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside the country, outside of the U.S. or Canada, you could still call us. Just use Skype out. That'll work. 888-827-5536. How's your sleep? Just reading a book called Why We Sleep. And you know what the number one tip is? Put down the screens. Something happened in the last few years. And it happened slowly enough that maybe you didn't notice it, but I bet you have. We've all got these screens around us, in front of us, all the time. Let me see, just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. I've got 15, and I might have missed one or two in front of me right now. Of course, I'm not trying to sleep right now, but when I go to bed, I have a couple of phones. I have a laptop. I have an Echo Show, which has a screen. I have a bunch of stuff. I have screens all around me. Yeah, there's John's got his. There's your smartphone. Yeah, of course I have mine. I wouldn't. 16, 17. Oh, I didn't count those? He's saying count your phones. Oh, I counted those. this morning, the other reason I'm thinking about it, isn't that it's a sad thing when you get up at 4 in the morning and you're reading a book about sleep. That's sad. but there are really good reasons that you want to sleep better. They're learning more and more that there's a direct correlation between how much you sleep and health. And there's very much a correlation, I think, between how much time we spend looking at our screens, especially at night. I'm curious, do you keep your phone by your bed? I know a lot of you are very, very good people who say, no, I charged it in the other room, so I'm not tempted to pick it up. No? No, you have it right there, right? Yeah, you too, yeah. I have to say, you walk through any city in the United States, and everybody's looking at their screen all the time while they walk, while they drive. It's illegal, but every time I'm at a stop sign, I look around, and there's a bunch of people looking at their phones. I'm on a stop sign. It's okay. It feels like we're almost sleepwalking through life, and then we don't get a good night's sleep, and we really are sleepwalking through life. I don't know what the answer is. I'm not giving up my phone. You can, sorry. I know, that is, come up with another solution, okay? Come up with another one. I kind of like the fact. It's really kind of remarkable. The other thing that made me think about this is I just saw a documentary. It's debuting in Silicon Valley this week. It's about a company. Actually, John Sculley, the former CEO at Apple, the guy who fired Steve Jobs, called it the most important company in Silicon Valley that no one's ever heard of. It's a company called General Magic, right? No one, never. Early 90s. It was a bunch of Apple engineers. The men and women who designed the Macintosh, actually, in the early 80s, were kind of looking for the next thing, and they were looking and they were looking. And one of the Apple guys came along, a guy named Mark Porat. He'd been thinking about this for a long time. He had a big binder, big red binder, full of sketches and descriptions of a device you would carry around with you. It'd have a big, you know, maybe 5 or 6 inch glass screen, touch screen. This is before email was widely used, but it would allow you to message people. It was before emojis, but it had animated little icons that would smile and dance and laugh. There were a few weird ones. There was a banana, oh no, a lemon on a stick. I don't know what that was supposed to mean. But this is before the internet. It was essentially, if you look at it, the design for our smartphones, but 20 years before the smartphone came out. The company eventually, in the early 90s, made a partnership with AT&T and Motorola and Sony, Panasonic, Fujitsu, to make this device. Cost $900, which at the time was ridiculous, was considered ridiculous. It didn't, because the internet wasn't really widespread, it didn't use the internet. It used AT&T's proprietary network. That might have been one of the problems it had. So it was a little expensive, a lot expensive. Proprietary network, but it was kind of like the iPhone, the Magic Link, they called it. And it flopped. But the people who worked at that company, well, one of them was Tony Fadell. He was just a kid. He was so excited about the idea that he could work with the original Macintosh engineers like Andy Hertzfeld and Bill Atkinson that he flew out from Detroit and camped outside the office and harassed the HR person until she's finally said, all right, fine, you can have a job. Tony Fadell was his name. He ended up designing the iPod and the iPhone. Went back to Apple and designed that. A guy named Andy Rubin worked there. You might know that name. He created Android and ended up designing Android phones for Google. The guy in charge of artificial intelligence and search at Google, who just recently got hired by Apple to run the Siri division, John Giandrea, was there. In fact, it turns out many of the engineers who have changed the world in the last decade with the iPhone and the Android devices started at this little company, General Magic, that ended up going bankrupt. Nobody wanted it. But they invented the future. They invented these screens. And even then, way back when, they had this notion. Mark Porat had this notion. He was so discouraged by the failure of the company that he got out of the tech industry entirely. He does building supplies now. And he still has that red notebook. In the documentary, they show it. He still has that red notebook. And in it is literally a blueprint for what we have today. I guess it wasn't that far-fetched. You could kind of see it happening. Computers were popping up on every desk, but they were big, they were heavy. Maybe laptops, but again, too big and heavy. The internet was just a twinkle in the eye of the general public. The universities and defense department had it. It had been invented years before, but it wasn't really coming out until the mid-90s when we all started using it. But all the pieces of the puzzle were kind of there. And the idea that we would have someday in our pockets effectively a supercomputer, the processor in the new iPhone X is as fast as a laptop computer, as fast as a supercomputer of 20 years ago, that was always connected to the internet, that was continually able to message us and keep us in touch with the world around us. They didn't even think about GPS, but knows exactly where we are at all times. You can never get lost if you have a smartphone. You just open up the map and say, oh, here I am. That's a magical invention. So maybe we don't get a good night's sleep anymore. Maybe it's worth it. Maybe there's a reason why I have that phone right there. I think some part of our mind realizes what a miracle it is. And it sure is addictive, isn't it? It sure is compelling. And I see there's those of you out there going, oh, Leo, you're such an addict. Don't be righteous. You just haven't gotten hooked yet. That's all. 888 Ask Leo. It's the stuff we talk about on this show. If you want to call and talk, tell me what your solution is for getting a good night's sleep. Talk about how to use these devices better. 8888 Ask Leo. What's on your mind today? I could talk a little bit about that new MacBook that Apple shipped. I've been playing with it. I have some opinions there, too. Let's talk tech. Next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There she is, Kim Schaffa, the tech girl. Hello, Kim Schaffa.
Good morning.
She is answering the phones and ready to get you in your big appearance on national radio.
Yes.
Yes. Who should I, who is best groomed?
I'm at a loss for words today.
It's all right, me too. So this is going to be a great radio show. Thank God we've got callers.
How about Paul in Columbus, Ohio?
How
sounds
about
like
it?
He's having some trouble with backup.
Paul in Columbus. You know what started in Columbus, Ohio, Paul? Big tech company.
Yeah. The tip of my tongue.
It's funny because Ready Player One in the movie, not in the book, but Ready Player One in the movie is also, I think they call Columbus the fastest growing part of the country because a big tech company, a gaming company, was headquartered there. But in the old days, it was CompuServe.
CompuServe. Couldn't say it.
Yep. Were you on CompuServe, Paul? I was.
No, I just kind of skipped over that and went to a
AOL
type of a browser. No, I didn't like AOL.
Oh, you like the internet, the real internet.
I like the regular browser, and I can't think of the name of that one.
Mosaic or Netscape or? The first browser that I used was Mosaic. It was out of the University.
I think it might have been Mosaic. Yeah,
University of Illinois at Urbana, Champaign-Urbana. What can I do for you, Paul?
Well, real quick, before we get to the backup problem, because it's kind of goofy and I created it myself. I've got.
I like problems that we create ourselves. Those are good.
Well, I want to. So somebody in your family, I heard yesterday, is going wing walking on a walker.
My wife thinks she is. We'll see if I'll let her.
It's pronounced Waco.
Waco.
They were made in Troy, Ohio. I happened to, as a kid, lived off the end of the little airstrip where those things flew out of. It was a grass airstrip. The company made biplanes, and then during World War II, they made gliders that they used like the D-Day. And
so wing walking was a thing at the old, you know, the barnstormers at the county fairs and stuff. Some crazy guy would get out. He'd fly his biplane up in the air, and then he'd get out and walk around on the wing, or maybe it was his compadre.
Exactly.
Somebody had to still fly the plane, I guess.
Well, they have a fly, and they have a little museum in Troy for this, not at the same place, but another little airstrip, and they have a fly-in every year or so. They fly in these little biplanes, and it's quite a kick.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing any wing walking. But Johnny Jett, our travel guy, told us a place in England that will let you do it. They strap you onto this.
I heard you talking about.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. And then my wife comes running in and says, I want to do that. I said, no, what? She's a daredevil, which is funny. I'm married to her because I won't even go on a roller coaster.
Me either. I wouldn't go on a roller coaster.
What are you, nuts?
Put me on a shuttle, but not a roller coaster.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind going into space. I'll go into space. At least you're doing something interesting. So what can I do for you?
Okay. Well, I've got a Carbonite backup on my old. I had a Dell XPS computer, and I had Carbonite on it.
Yeah.
And I got an iMac a couple years ago and started transferring stuff over, and I put Boot Camp on and was running. So I'm running Windows 10 on the iMac and love it. So I didn't set up Carbonite right away because I had made up my mind how big I wanted the drives and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I have this backup that I froze in December. WDC backup also. So things I've got stuff there pretty much.
Yeah.
But I changed the file structure when I went to the new computer. I set it up like I had an S drive for stuff, everything but operating system, kind of like you suggested.
Yeah, I like doing that. Sure. I have the main drive, the C drive is where the operating system and programs are, and then I use the D, conveniently named D drive for data. That's actually helped me recently because I was, can't remember what, something went wrong and I reinstalled, and because all of my data was on a separate drive, didn't mm-hmm. impact it at all, and I just had an alias linking back to that data from my main drive. Yeah.
Well, when I set up the iMac with the Windows 10, I don't have that separate partition. I just have a C partition. So I don't have, I had C and S before, now I've got just C.
Right.
So I tried to do a start, didn't know how to do a backup where it would catch that stuff rather than kind of duplicating it all over the place in a different.
Oh, I see what you did. Yeah, because you, so it doesn't know that this is a different, this is the same set of files. It says, well, the name is different because the name includes the drive letter or the volume
name.
And so it says, oh, this is new. I'm going to create a new tree branch of that tree. And I think that's the right behavior because you don't want it to be not backing stuff up. It's better that it back more up than less.
Except I'm going to run out of drive space if I let it back it up.
Yeah, now you kind of got to do some brain surgery. If you know they're equivalent, you can prune it out. Now, are you talking about on your Carbonite backup or are you talking about on your actual hard drive?
Well, I've got everything backed up on the WDC
On the Western Digital book, well, my book or whatever.
Western
okay.
Digital,
so
yeah,
good. That's always a great, by the way, good idea. I think sometimes people assume, well, I got one backup. I got Carbonite or whatever. I don't need to have a local backup. I think it's a really important to have three copies of everything. Your original,
right.
A local, and a cloud version. That really, that's belt and suspenders, I know, but it but storage is cheap, and it really is good to have all three. So the good news is you know you can... On a I'm unclear. Are you talking about on Windows or on Mac?
On Windows.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not worrying about the Mac side at this point. I don't really use it that much.
It's just so you're using a Macintosh as a Windows machine with its own Windows partition. So you don't even have to pay attention to the Macintosh partition for this.
No. Right.
So there are a couple of things you can do. One of the nice things to know is this is true on Mac or Windows. The you can tell the operating system. My data disk is here. It's not there. It's not where you assume it is. It's here. It's here. So you could, and I would do this before you prune, because you're going to want to get rid of one of these two trees. You could say to Windows, my my home folder, my personal folder is here, is on this part of the drive or on this partition. And then once you've done that, you can delete the duplicate somewhere else. Does that make sense what I just said?
Well, yeah, kind of. It's just a matter of do I have, should I change? I can leave it as the whole drive as C and then just go into that.
Do you want to have a D drive now? Is that it?
Not necessarily, no.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, that's a finesse that you can live without. So let's not overcomplicate it. So, yeah, let's get everything on C. I mean, you could just delete the duplicate as long as when you look in, and you can actually look at, get the properties of the of the My Documents folder, of all those folders, and tell it where it is. I use that to make it a D drive because Windows by default puts everything on C. So when I want to have a D drive, I actually go into the home folder and say the home folder's over here. And you do that in the properties. There is, you might have to go to the more advanced section. I'm pretty sure you do. Somewhere, a path, an actual fully qualified name of where those files live, that can be modified. Pointed to anything. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So does did that make sense? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. I know everything is there in one place or the other. It's just a matter if
I would move it around to where you want it to be. That's the first step.
I did get the download one of the copy utilities you recommended, rather than just trying to do copy within
Windows.
Yeah.
There is a very robust copy command in Windows they don't tell anybody about called RoboCopy. It's the worst name. It sounds like something janky that some guy made up, but actually it's from it's in the command line. RoboCopy is much more robust. It doesn't if it fails, you know, it doesn't erase everything. It verifies as it's copying and all that stuff. So you can go into the command line and look at RoboCopy. You've been around long enough, you probably can use the command line fairly
comfortably. Yeah, so I can probably if I take a folder, let's say that there's a folder on the new machine and I've got the old folder and I want to make sure everything's there. If I copy that one folder to the other, it's going to just either replace if I tell it to or just ignore the existing one and just add the stuff that I may have missed, right?
Yeah. You may want a sync utility as well because, in fact, usually when I get in a situation like this, and you're not alone, this is very, I've done this many times.
Would Playwork?
Huh?
Would SyncToy work?
I don't like SyncToy. That's a free one from Microsoft. It's not the greatest. Yeah. There are other better sync utilities. And what they'll do is they'll make them a mirror image. So if it, and that's kind of what you want, because you may have stuff in two different places, whatever. Right. You know, this will, a synchronization utility is, so RoboCopy is if you just want to copy stuff robustly from one place to the other. But I think what you more want is a synchronization tool.
Okay.
So not SyncToy. I use Second Copy from Centered Systems, but somebody wrote me and said, "Oh, it's no good anymore." I don't know. That's what I use. But there are other more modern programs out there to do that.
All right, I'll take a look.
Yeah, just search around for synchronization. Mike B is mentioning rsync, and that is certainly what I use on a Macintosh. That's a, I don't know if there's, is there rsync on Windows? That would be awesome if there were. No. You'd have to get it for Windows. On a Unix system or a Linux system or, you know, Macintosh, rsync, it does exactly that, and it does it as efficiently as possible. In fact, it's so fast, I was using it last night. I thought, you didn't do anything. Because I had Dropbox duplicating something that I had stored in another cloud. And I didn't want both. So I had them sync so that everything that's, just to make sure everything in the Dropbox cloud was in the Synology cloud and vice versa. I wanted to have them sync, and then I could delete one or the other.
All right.
There is a a Windows version of rsync, so that's the letter R. R-S-Y-N-C. That is the power toy that everything else is copying.
Okay, great. I'll take a look at that. I hope you're not going on vacation June next year, because I'm coming out to get a new guide dog, and I wanted to come.
Oh, nice! We've got a guide dog in training in the studio right now.
Beautiful
yellow lab. She's gorgeous. What kind of guide dog is she? Companions for Independence. Yeah. His name is Charger.
Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Yeah, they're just down the road a piece. Yeah, they're in Riverfell,
right. Exactly.
Well, when you come out, please, I'll be looking for you in June. And please bring your new puppy.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I love meeting the dogs. They're so sweet. Charger's just been sleeping.
Oh, they're all great dogs.
They're really amazing.
They do a wonderful job.
Yeah, they really are.
Job.
Yeah, isn't it great? Hey, it's nice to talk to you. I look forward to seeing you in June. I won't go anywhere just for you.
Yeah, you stay there in June.
I'm making a note of that. Nowhere in June. Paul's coming out. Thanks, Paul.
It would probably be 9 and 7 is 16th, around the 16th.
I typically don't go anywhere in June because that's when all the kids are out of school and I don't want to go anywhere in June.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Where are you going in the fall?
Western Europe. We're going on a cruise. It leaves from Barcelona. It ends up in Barcelona.
Did that last year.
Did you?
Did that a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, a year ago in May.
I'm nervous. It's 3 weeks.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's great.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to Paris in September for a week.
Have fun. I love Paris.
Later. Thank you.
Later, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on the 150th anniversary of the Golden Retriever. That's a random fact from the chat room. Thank you, Waikiki Guru. We actually have a yellow lab in studio from the, the center?
Canine
Companions for Independence. And he's being trained right now, but not much longer. He's about to graduate. And he's so excited about that he's fast asleep. Charger. 8888 Ask Leo. Brian in Nashville, Tennessee is next. Hey, Brian.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I am hanging in like a hair.
Oh, you got me again.
This is getting too easy.
See, it's just because my mom taught me to be polite. If somebody asks how you're doing, you ask them. And then Brian comes along. You get some new witticisms, though, dude.
I actually searched on some, but I try to find some that at least I've heard. Some of them are just too old and weird, and I said, nah.
Well, you're in Nashville. I bet you could find some old-timer, know some good ones.
Oh, you don't know.
What can I do for you, Brian?
Oh, two things. One, I did want to update you that the last time I called you, I was asking about these external SSDs. I was trying to reverse engineer a cable that it would let it plug into my Mac Mini without an adapter. And
right.
Turns out, and it really surprised the heck out of me, that plugging it in just with the USB 3, this thing is fast.
Yeah, I thought that would, I think that was my advice, is don't worry about trying to get to Thunderbolt. Just, yeah, USB 3 is good. And it may be as fast as the drive is, for all we know, right?
I didn't bother checking that. I just know it was so much faster. And the others that I had tried, there were a few I didn't try that were probably higher on the list, but everybody was saying they were uncomfortable using them because they got so hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one does not even barely get warm.
Who makes this one? This sounds good.
This is that SanDisk.
Oh, I love that.
SSD.
Yeah. Those are good. Yeah.
I ended up getting the 500 gig, and I'm going to use that for work, and the 250 stays just connected on my Mac Mini.
We've been using the Samsung T2s as well. These are really small, but they get hot. those get hot.
So. Yeah, and like I said, the only reason these get hot and stay hot, and that warns you know as well as I do, if it stays hot for a long time, 10 hours a day,
it's not good for
you. It's got to fail at some point. Yeah. So, which leads into my second thing. Now that I have a good SSD for working outside the house, because basically what I was using that for was, it's like right now, I'm behind my computers where I work from home, and it plugs in, and it basically has the virtual for Parallels that I work in for work, because I have to be in Windows 10.
Yeah.
Hate it, but hey, that's life. It pays the bills. But I've set up my man cave so nice, and it's not your typical man cave, you know, where everybody has beer signs and sports stuff. Mine's all antique stuff and I birdwatch, so I got bird stuff. Anyway, it's so comfortable, and I got these two large 27-inch monitors. It's so comfortable and easy to work that I just don't get out much more anymore. And I got some friends at the coffee house that are screaming at me. So one of the things I started looking at...
You just want to have some friends so you can go out. take your man cave with you. You need the portable man cave.
Well, funny you said portable. That leads right in as well. What I tried to use a long time ago, and it just didn't work well, is a portable monitor. And that's
what I'm
looking at now. I've spent the last 3 days looking at it.
I'll tell you what Father Robert told me about. Father Robert had one that I was blown away by. You know, the digital Jesuit. He's the priest who works for me, except...
Is he at the...
I found out he doesn't work for me. He's at the Vatican now.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. He's gone. Actually, he's in Vatican boot camp up in Oregon. And then after boot camp, I don't think he's doing push-ups, but whatever it is they do at Vatican boot camp, after that, then in the fall, he's going to be in Rome. And basically, he's the Pope's IT guy. Now, the thing that he had that I was blown away by comes from Asus, A-S-U-S. It's called the Zen screen. Now, it's 15 inches, so it's the size of a laptop screen. You can get them bigger, but the idea of portability is you want to be able to carry the thing, right?
Yeah.
They make a number of portable monitors, but this is...
That's a good point. That would fit real well in the slot.
Right, exactly.
The laptop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Asus?
Oh,
ZenPad.
Asus Zen Screen. It's from ASUS, Asus, and it's 15.6 inches. Yeah. It's Type-C. So you can use it with USB Type-C or Type-A. In other words, USB. If your Windows 10 supports DisplayLink, which it does, might do it out of the box. You might have to add some software. You're set. You plug it in, and that is a beautiful... He showed it to me. It blew me away. It's a beautiful monitor. Asus makes other less expensive ones. This one's $238 on Amazon.
That's what I'm looking at right now, $238.37.
Yep. They make a one that's about $50 less if you want for this USB 3. But if you want the one that works with your Type C connector,
yeah, I've reached an age where generally I believe in the adage you get what you pay for, so I don't mind spending a little extra if it's better.
Yeah, look at the specs. It's full HD, which means it's 1080p. But on a 15-inch monitor, I think that's about right. I don't think you see monitors now, they're much higher resolution, 2880 by 1440, that kind of thing. And I don't think at 15 inches, that's a good idea at all. He showed me, I was very impressed. I think he's bringing it to Rome with him.
Well, that's exactly what I needed.
If Robert likes it, I think, now I'm going to suggest that maybe next time you bring along Bob Bradford's book, just go to heronabiscuit.com His name of his book is Hang In There Like a Hare in a Biscuit. And then you'll get that out of your system and find a new witticism.
I promise this. I will have a new one the next time I call.
You know, busier than a room full of one-armed paper hangers, or more anxious than a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocket chairs. Something, you know?
Oh, that was that was too big a hair on that screen. That was not a hair.
That's a big biscuit too, though. So
that's
it's got a
tail.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a selling book. Selling the Seas of a Winner. I don't know what that. It's a step-by-step guide for overcoming adversity.
Yeah, well, for what it's worth, we're not barefoot and we don't have straw in our mouth. We actually get degrees and
come on now. I've seen Hee Haw. I know what you people are like.
Yeah. No.
Actually, I had a wonderful day in Nashville. I got the great, I think I told you this before, great pleasure and privilege of getting to sit on the stage at the Grand Ole Opry. You know, they have those chairs in the back, and watch those masterful performers do an amazing job. And I love Nashville. You live in a great part of the country, yep. And great music. Nice
well,
to talk
you, sir.
To you.
I appreciate it.
Anytime, Brian. Yeah, you know, portable monitor, sure, it should be the size of a laptop, right? But I'm thinking, why not just bring a laptop? I don't know. He asked the question, I answered it. I have to say, now, I talked a little bit yesterday about the new MacBook Pro, and I did get the very expensive one with the i9 processor, which is clearly Intel's marketing term. I don't know what makes it a 9 as opposed to a 3, 5, or 7, but the i9 processor, 32 gigs of RAM, its own discrete graphics card, and a lot of people saying, oh, this thing runs so hot, you'll never get all the speed. I beg to differ. This thing is marvelous. I've been very happy now, and I'm getting great battery life because the processor is so smart about speeding up and slowing down as needed. That when I'm just doing the casual stuff, surfing and so forth, it goes 7 or 8 hours. It's expensive, but I think they did a good job. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now I can talk to you about SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe is the most amazing home security system. And I just, I really think this is awesome. These guys obsess over the details. They're great engineers who created a system because they felt like alarm systems for the home were really overpriced, overcomplicated. They wanted to make something that worked just as well, but at a much better cost, and something that works well. For instance, you know, one problem you've had maybe with some of the other alarm systems, the glass break sensors, sometimes you drop a plate, it says, oh my God, burglars are breaking in, or even worse, a baby's crying. Tim, you'd have a problem there. Baby cries, it thinks somebody's breaking in. That's no good. SimpliSafe didn't want to settle for something like that. So they created a glass break test facility where they tested 10,000 live glass break simulations to refine their detection technology until it was so accurate it knows the difference between a broken window and a broken plate. That's what I mean by that. These guys are amazing. They put that kind of detail, that kind of effort, that kind of thinking into everything they do, and that's what one of the things that makes them completely different from these other security companies. It's designed so you won't have to even think about it. It's just easy. It's intuitive. You get 24-hour monitoring 7 days a week, police and fire dispatch for the lowest cost anywhere. Check the other guys. SimpliSafe is about a third the cost, $15 a month, and no long-term contracts. $15 a month. It's the best around-the-clock protection you can find, and you can install the sensors yourself so you don't have to have some big guy traipsing through your house with a drill. It's very easy, and it's very affordable, and the best way to find out is go to simplisafe.com/twit. Simplisafe.com/twit. And they didn't want me to tell you about this, but I want to tell you something they're doing that they really deserve credit for. They're going to donate a SimpliSafe system for every system that they sell to a family in need. That is really, really nice. SimpliSafe.com/twit. SimpliSafe.com/twit. You're helping yourself and you're helping a family in need. SimpliSafe.com/twit. I really like these guys. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number if you want to talk high tech. Daily. It's a little Sunday is a little more relaxed, isn't it? We're just kind of sitting around, chewing the fat, playing checkers on the barrel out on the porch. Dale from Palmdale, California. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Not bad. So one of the things I wanted to make a statement for before I got to my question was that a lot of people were calling in and asking how to replace things and get new stuff. If they have DirecTV and they have the insurance, a lot of their electronics can actually be replaced for like $50.
Wait a minute, DirecTV? No, you said something wrong there. If they have what?
No, DirecTV.
DirecTV, like the satellite TV thing?
Exactly.
They can. What does that have to do with replacing your gadgets for $50?
Well, what I do is I have the insurance with them, and I had a TV that went bad, and they came out, they looked at it, they said they couldn't replace it for $50. They gave me a brand new TV.
Wow. So DirecTV sells extended warranties for television stuff.
Well, it's electronics. The only thing that they don't cover is like projectors because, of course, the bulbs burn out, so they don't want to, have to replace those. But for most TVs, and what they'll do is if the TV is old and they can't fix it, they'll replace it with an equal or better TV or, supposedly speakers or, that one guy that called in and his speakers were bad.
Yeah.
If he had DirecTV, he could call him up, and if he has the insurance policy, he can actually, for $50, they'll send him out a label. He'll put him in a box, send him out, and they'll fix him.
It's called the Direct. I didn't know about this DirecTV Protection Plan.
Right.
And there's the $8.99 a month, or the Premier for $21 a month, and you can cover even laptops, desktops, tablets, LCD TVs, LEDs, plasmas. I notice OLED's not on this list. They're too expensive, probably. Yeah, that's nice.
I have
to
an
know
OLED,
about.
And I also have the plasma TV, still the Pioneer Elite.
Right. I did not know they did this, but not surprising. Insurance is a very good business.
Right.
So, what can I do for you? Thank you for the tip.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, what I'm looking into is I've got an Oculus Go.
Oh, yeah, that's the new version of the Oculus Rift virtual reality visor that's a standalone.
Right.
It's with like $200, and you don't need a phone or a computer or anything. And how do you like it?
I absolutely love it. I'm just trying to figure out with the streaming boxes how to actually get my video from the streaming boxes onto the Oculus Go. So it'll look like I'm sitting there watching it in a big theater versus watching it on a TV.
As you can watch, there are apps for it. You have to use an app, obviously. And there's some apps, like I think you can get Netflix on it. I don't know. I don't have one. We've had it reviewed. Some of my colleagues have them. And by the way, gave them a very good review. Is there a Netflix app for it?
That I'm not sure of.
I think you have to look for the apps. In other words, it isn't capable of receiving a stream from your phone like a Chromecast would be or something like that. But I think there are Oculus Go apps for, I know people watch movies on their Oculus Go. So,
right. And one of the nice things that I found is, they were saying, you can go into this room and you can watch a movie. So you go into the room. So I did it just to check it out, and next thing I know, I'm looking to my left and looking to my right, and there's people in there talking to me, and I'm just like,
What? Where do they come from? Who are they? Are they made-up people or real people?
They're avatars.
Oh, yeah, but of real people avatars?
Yeah.
Where are they?
Watching the movie with you, and you're sitting there carrying on a conversation.
I like that. Talk about virtual reality. Now you're in there with real people. Yeah, it's like you're in a theater, right? So there is
right,
a Netflix.
Exactly.
There's definitely.
I'm talking to my brother about trying to make an avatar that actually looks like me, and that way when I go into some place or whatever, when they look over, I won't look like everybody else. And then maybe they can get avatars made of themselves and do the same thing. But the other thing is like if you have family and they have an Oculus Go also, you can basically go into a virtual room and carry on a conversation with them.
Yeah, so you're using Oculus TV to do that, and that's one of the features of the Oculus Go. Netflix, I'm looking, it doesn't look like they yet support it, but at some point I'm sure they will. So for now, you can download the Netflix app on your Oculus Go, watch Netflix. It's up to the individual streaming channels, Hulu, Netflix, HBO Go, all of them, to make apps for the Oculus Go. I have no reason to think they wouldn't. And if they really want to do it right, they're going to make it social. They're going to make it work with the Oculus TV, and that will allow friends to sit next to you. That is wild. I was talking to somebody who believes that Apple's Memojis, have you seen these? They're going to come out in the fall with iOS 12, probably in September when they announce the new iPhone. And Apple's been talking a lot about this. You've probably seen people with the iOS 12 beta. And it looks kind of like you, but not exactly like you. And I have a friend who says, you know, this is Apple preparing us for the near future when we will, in fact, just like Ready Player One, we will be have avatars representing us in virtual worlds like the Oculus Go. And we'll be, you know, we can watch TV with loved ones who are across the country. I could be watching Netflix with my mom and I could look over to her and there's, you know, mom's Memoji and say, Mom, what do you think of this movie? And we could talk and watch the movie together. Pretty soon we'll never leave the house at all. Pretty soon we won't even know if there's anybody home. It'll just be us and our little visors. If you think it's bad that people stare at their phones all the time, wait till you go to a restaurant and a family, mom, dad, the kids, the teenagers, they're all eating a meal and none of them are looking at each other because they are wearing visors. Yeah, I'm watching my movie. She's watching her movie. Oh, we can talk because we're virtual characters in the other person's visor. That's you think I'm joking. That's going to happen. You can when it happens in 2023 and you walk into a restaurant, there's a whole family wearing visors. You can say, yeah, I think Leo mentioned this. Wow, that must have been, what was that, 2018 he was talking about that? We won't even talk anymore. Well, it's straight out of WALL-E. Remember that scene in WALL-E? They're all flying in floating chairs, drinking their giant Slurpees with their headsets on. It's the future, folks. We're heading there right now. Our show, oh, boy. I don't know how I feel about that. 8888-ASK-LEO, the number. I didn't mention we have a website that's free and easy. Yeah, and it's got a great search. And it's there so that you don't have to write anything down as you're listening to the show. All the notes are up there. Thank you, James DeRuvo. He's writing it all down right now. Just go to techguylabs.com. In fact, you don't really have to remember anything you hear. Let it all flow over you. But if you say, oh, what was the name of that? Just techguylabs.com. No charge, no sign up. It's right there for you. We're going to take a little break. News coming up, top of the hour. Lots more to talk about. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater. We talk about digital photography. In fact, we're going to do that in about half an hour with Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. We talk about smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, the Oculus Go. We haven't received a whole lot of calls about virtual reality. And I'm kind of starting to think that VR is maybe not going to be the big thing everybody thought it was, at least not yet. I was talking to somebody, actually, somebody I think we're going to start using on the show, a guy named Adam Fisher, who is a Silicon Valley historian. He's a Wired magazine editor. But he wrote a book called Valley of Genius, which is the result of him interviewing 200 Silicon Valley legends. And so it's their story. And he said, I wanted to make the stories that they tell when they get together at cocktail parties and stuff. Not the history, the official history that you hear, but the real story. And it was his contention. I think he's right. That really, it's Silicon Valley that decides what the next big thing is. Not customers, not users, not us. Silicon Valley, all of a sudden, everybody says, oh, the next big thing is virtual reality. He says the best example is 3D printing. So all of a sudden, a bunch of guys said, 3D printing, that's it. We're all going to be printing stuff. And it's kind of informed, I think, by science fiction. Like, I think a lot of the inventions that come out of Silicon Valley come from science fiction. That these guys and gals, these inventors, when they were kids, they read science fiction. They said, someday I'm going to have a flying car. And they spend their life, you know, working toward that because they read it in a science fiction novel. So Adam says, you know, 3D printing, Bree Pettis and people like that said, you know, that's the next big thing. And someday you're going to have, you'll never, it'll be, and you know what it is? It's the replicator from Star Trek, right? Where they go in, they say, I need to, give me a cup of tea. And then, give me a blaster. Whatever. It'll print whatever you want in the replicator. It's very convenient if you're a TV writer. You don't have to explain how anything got there because, well, they just made it in the replicator. Hey, you can make anything. A leg? No problem. So he said that's really what happened is that these guys said, oh, we need replicators. And they made these 3D printers. And a lot of us bought them. Did you buy one? And did you use it for more than a week? No. Because it turns out it's really hard and what it makes isn't that good. And and it's kind of, and it's over. I think virtual reality is like that too. And that comes from science fiction. It comes from novels by some of our greatest science fiction authors like William Gibson about the virtual reality world that we live in, Ready Player One. We're talking about that where, you know, you have a whole second life. Oh, by the way, there's a company called Second Life. You have a whole second life in the metaverse where you can do anything. And for years, at least as long as 20 years, I remember 1992 going down to a convention in Los Angeles and putting on the same exact kind of visor, except it was hooked up with a big, thick cable to a giant million-dollar computer at the time and riding a pterodactyl. You're riding and flying. Wow, this is amazing. Incredible. You do it for 5 minutes. And you go home and say, man, this is the next big thing. And I think that that's what happened is people tried it. It's a wow for a few minutes until you get nauseous. But for the first few minutes, it's like, I have seen the future. And then the next 10 minutes is I can't wait to find a bathroom. It is not a good experience for the long haul for most of us. Now, some people love it, like our last caller. And obviously, he wants to sit in a virtual reality movie theater watching TV with an avatar next to him, left or right. See, we've combined it all, right? We're in the virtual world. It's like Ready Player One. We're in the virtual world. But I'm kind of the opinion that this is another one that Silicon Valley kind of said, oh, this is going to be the next big thing in the world. So what Adam says, and this is really interesting, there's a guy named Scott Hassan. He's in the Valley of Genius. He's in the book. Who is one of those people that most of us have never heard of, who turns out to be really, really important. Scott Hassan was, in many respects, the creator of Google. He's the third founder of Google. You ever hear of him? You've heard of Larry Page and Sergey Brin. They were graduate students at Stanford who had this idea for a research project because they wanted to get their PhDs that would be an internet search engine. They didn't think it was a product because, I mean, after all, there was already Excite and Lycos and AltaVista. Who needs another search engine? But they thought this will be good for a PhD. And this guy, Scott Hassan, was just a guy in the computer lab who was assigned to write the code for these graduate students so they could graduate and get their PhDs. So he wrote the code for Google. Larry and Sergey just kind of thought about it. He was the one who said, you know, this could be a product. No, they tried to sell it. I think they tried to sell it to Yahoo. And Yahoo didn't want it. Eventually became, oh, Google? Yeah, Google. So Scott Hassan, pretty smart guy. He said, so the latest thing Silicon Valley is all crazy about, self-driving cars, right? Yeah, except, and you're already seeing this, I have a Tesla. I let it drive whenever I can. It's a little, you feel like it's maybe a little risky. It might plow you into a divider at any moment. So you keep your hand on the wheel and pretty much pay attention to what's going on. It isn't really autopilot. It's assistant that sometimes gets the wrong idea. He says, Scott Hassan says, yeah, this is Silicon Valley's science fiction idea of the future. But, you know, regulatory issues are going to be a nightmare. Because you're going to have to get approval not just in the U.S., in every state of the U.S., in every city of the U.S. You're going to have to get insurers to go along with it. And most importantly, you're going to have to get people to get in those cars with no steering wheel, brake, or accelerator and go. And he said, that's going to be tough. He said, you know what's really going to happen? flying cars. What? Another, by the way, I just want to point out, science fiction fantasy, that we all thought we would have flying cars by now, right? Well, we couldn't until a few things happened. One, batteries had to get good enough because there's a problem with batteries. They're heavy. But you don't want to use jet fuel in flying cars. You want to use electric fuel. You want to use batteries. They're now getting to the point where batteries are light enough and they can actually make a flying vehicle that runs electrically, has decent range. It's about as efficient as a regular car. The other thing you need, humans can't drive them, right? You'd be crashing over your head all the time. A fender bender on the road's one thing. A fender bender in the air is a completely different matter. So we need autonomous vehicles. We need them to be able to drive themselves so there aren't any accidents. And that's so it may turn out, and boy, Scott might be right on this one. It may turn out that we don't get self-driving cars. We get flying cars instead. And by the way, because they're flying, you don't have to get state or city approval. You need one government agency, the FAA, to approve it. If the FAA goes for it, you're done. Interesting, huh? Maybe that'll be the next big thing. Do you want? Everybody wants flying cars. We saw it in the Jetsons. We know it has to exist. It's got to happen. It was in the Jetsons. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to come back and talk flying cars. Waikiki Guru says, people can hardly operate ones on the ground. Well, that's the point. They don't drive them. It's magic. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're all going to fly like eagles. See, the idea, people are worried about flying cars. I don't blame you because, of course, a flying car crashes would be devastating, not only the people in it, but the people below them. And I can just imagine the sun being blacked out by, I mean, what if you had the same amount of traffic you have on the freeway in the morning up above you? But remember, of course, it's not restricted to the freeway. It's going to be spread out more. I think private car ownership is gone anyway, whether we get self-driving cars or self-driving planes. They come to you. So you just pull out your app. That's why Uber's, by the way, valued at umpteen billions of dollars, because it's not the Uber of today that people are investing in. It's the future where you pull out your phone, you get your Uber app, and you say, I need to go downtown. And the flying car comes, no driver, just this drone basically comes out of the sky, lands in your driveway, you hop in, you press go, you say, yeah, take me to work. And remember, you don't just have one plane that you can fly on, one level you can fly on. There's many. So I don't think congestion is going to be actually that much of a problem, although you will see a lot of, you know, little buzzing things above you and maybe noisy. Are they noisy? Maybe they are. Okay, some things we have to work out. But I want self-driving cars. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. See, I read about that in science fiction. Ed's in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hi, Ed.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, pretty good. Talked to you a couple of times over the years. We just used to be Ed from Upland. We're now in Las Vegas. So.
Well, how are you liking the move?
Well, the move is finally done. We've been doing it for 8 months, but my wife couldn't make up her mind to retire, and so finally we made it up here, but now our company still won't let her retire.
Oh, no. She needs a flying car.
Yeah, she does. Yep. And if the Jetsons say it was going to happen, it's going to happen, right?
Absolutely. We've got everything in the Jetsons. Rosie the robot. We've got the conveyor belt to walk the dog. We've got it all.
Anyway, I got a question that I've asked friends and all that, and even my daughter, who thinks Apple invented the world, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But I have a Plantronics Bluetooth. I'm blind, and I've talked to you before about issues on a computer for the blind.
Yes, yes.
So I have an iPhone 7, and I can't see the screen, so I use a Bluetooth and Siri to make calls, answer calls, do this, do that.
That's the future, if you think about it. Who would have thought? That's the future, if you think about it. Who would have thought 20 years ago you'd be able to say out loud, call Francis, And the
absolutely.
You'd go, brr, brr, and you'd be talking to Francis in your a little thing in your ear.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm amazed that, you know, when I heard you talking about being able to do phone calls on your Echo, I've got Echoes all over the place. And, I mean, everything that
Isn't
you
that
can
great?
Do with the Echoes and the Bluetooth
yeah.
in your ear. And
yeah.
It's amazing. Technology is incredible, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is if I'm on a phone call with this Plantronics, and it's a Plantronics M90,
okay.
I guess is the model number.
Okay.
And if I get another call coming in, now there's only three buttons, two on one side of this, which are your volume controls.
Yeah.
And the other one is your on and off button. And then, of course, the button on the face of it is the one where you answer a call or you hold it down to tell Siri to do something or ask her a question or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you get a if you're on a call and I get a second call coming in, Leo.
Yeah, you get the call holding, you get that little click, the little call waiting.
Well, yeah, but I can't. I've been told, you know, hold down this button and that button or the two volume buttons or the this or the one on the front where you answer a call.
Yeah.
But every time I do, I cut off the caller.
Right.
I hang up on people.
All the time. You're not alone.
I don't
so
know how to do call
originally,
holding on
when call when call waiting came in, right, you were supposed this is back in the days when you had a telephone that had a
right.
cradle, and you were supposed to tap the button in the cradle once, and it would pick up the other thing. But half the time, you would still hang up, by the way. I just want to point
right,
out.
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's not like things have gotten any different. You're,
no,
you need
a different device.
You need to flash the hook, and that's a signal. I think call. I, by the way, got rid of call waiting because I think it was an imperfect technology. Now,
well,
if you had a
true.
Smartphone, and that's this is the problem on the screen. What you would see is buttons that say there will be several buttons. One is hang up on this call and take that call. The other one is
my,
put
my
this
daughter
call.
Told me that. Leo,
yeah,
and she's of course. Think she's a
she's
like I said. She thinks Apple invented the world. She's
yes.
got the MacBook, the iMac, and the iPhone, and this and that.
Well,
and, you know.
You can tell her Android devices do the same thing. But the idea
yeah, but
is
see,
that
I can't see the screen being blind.
Exactly. That's how they solve this. Is instead of that crazy flash the hook thing.
Right.
They have a good way of doing it, which is there's a button on the screen that explicitly tells you what to do. You know, put it on hold, listen to the other call, merge the call. You can actually merge the calls to make
okay.
a conference call out of it. So the trick really is how do we convert a simple Bluetooth touch interface to that? And it sounds, I mean, I'm not, by the way, do I have an answer for you? No, because I don't, it doesn't work for me either.
Well, you might answer it a different way. You're an Apple guy, just like my daughter is. She says that the AirPod, I believe, which is
yes.
Apple's
those are actually,
earbud.
I think you might like those.
You know, she's because that was designed for Apple and,
yes.
Or for an iPhone.
Or do you use an iPhone?
If you tap that, it will do call holding, she thinks.
Well, it'd probably be just as in it. I mean, you know what you should do? Get her to take you down to the Apple store and try it. And see if you can do it reliably. She has a point. The AirPods are designed specifically. I mean, they'll work with any Bluetooth, but they're designed specifically to work with the iPhone. They actually have a chip in them. The iPhone has a W1 chip, and the AirPods support it as well. That because Apple realized Bluetooth was kind of not very reliable, so
right.
they claim they've made Bluetooth more reliable, and I have to say I think they have. They also the sound quality is very good. They're a good speakerphone. They're comfortable. I think it might be worth looking at, but it is $149.
Oh, really? Okay. She told me $120, but okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can get it a deal. But what I would do is absolutely try before you buy, and the Apple Store is good about that. So go
yeah.
in there and say, I need to make sure that I can put a call on hold and switch over. What would
yeah,
be really good?
Worth $150 to me, right?
Yeah. And you might ask the Apple Genius this because they may actually have an answer for you. What would be really good is if you could tell Siri what to do. Because these phones do talk to Siri, so you double tap the earbuds, the AirPods, and you can talk to Siri. It'd be really nice if you could say to Siri, put this call on hold and pick up the other one. That would be more explicit.
I've never tried that. I know the Bluetooth I have, the Plantronics, does work with Siri. I'm able to ask her questions or tell her to do things.
Yeah, so maybe ask the Apple Genius. Ask the Apple Genius if you can figure that one out. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy, coming up. Thank you for the call. I'm sorry I got to move on because I need to talk about our podcast sponsor for the day. I'm really pleased to say Rocket Mortgage has told us they're coming back next year. They love you guys, and obviously you love them. I thank you for your support of Rocket Mortgage. And I know why, because Rocket Mortgage is a product from Quicken Loans, best lender in the country, biggest, number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years in a row. They are now number one in volume, too. That happened in December. I think I have to take a little bit of credit for that as well. You guys, too. And Rocket Mortgage is a part of Quicken Loans that we geeks love because it's an entirely online mortgage approval process. What I like about Quicken Loans, they really are thinking about the user experience in kind of a Silicon Valley way that is not typical among mortgage lenders, shall we say. They're often not very sophisticated. Quicken Loans cares about its users and wants to give you what you need. One of the things they've noticed, and you may have noticed this too if you're house shopping, interest rates have started going up again. The Fed raised the rates. They said they're going to do it twice more. It follows shortly after that. The banks start raising the rates. The interest rates for home loans go up. That is anxiety making. We haven't had that problem for a few years. Rates have been very flat, but all of a sudden they're going up. So Rocket Mortgage has added a new feature to get rid of the anxiety. The anxiety comes when you're house hunting. This is a big decision. You got to find the right house, the most expensive thing you'll ever buy. And you don't want to be rushed into it. But with rates going up, you might feel some pressure to, oh, we got to buy now. It's going to be more expensive next month and the month after. That's why Quicken Loans has created something they call the power buying process. It's two steps. First, as always, with Rocket Mortgage, you verify your income, assets, and credit. They actually do all the work. You don't have to go to the attic and get stuff. They do it all through their trusted financial partners. You just have to give them permission. They say, okay, we're going to get your income, assets, and credit. Crunch the numbers. Within 24 hours, at most, usually it's a lot faster, they'll give you verified approval. That's really big because that means when you go and make an offer, the seller says, oh, well, they're good for it. It's like you're a cash buyer because you've already got the loan. So that's huge. That's a great first step. Then once you're verified, you qualify for this new thing, the all-new Rate Shield approval. It's exclusive. They lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop, 3 months. So your rate can't go up. You know you don't have the pressure now. Oh, we got to buy this house because it could cost more next month. No, you got 3 months. That's fantastic. Oh, and if your rate goes down, yeah, they'll drop the rate. They just won't raise it. So you win either way. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's best mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rate Shield approval. Here's the legal stuff. Only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. All you have to remember, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Thank you for supporting them. Thank them for supporting us. On we go with the Tech Guy Show. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Mama, don't take my Kodachrome. It's time for Chris Marquardt, our guru of photography. Chris is the editor-in-chief at discoverthetopfloor.com. He does a wonderful photography podcast called Tips from the Top Floor, leads photographic workshops. And there's some good news for those of you who wanted to go on his Northern Lights tour. Right, Chris?
Yeah, we're going to Lofoten, northern Norway, up in it's a beautiful archipelago. We'll be there for 9 days, 8 nights on land. And it's just beautiful there. And in September, there's a really good chance to have Northern Lights.
Oh, the
landscape is amazing. The seascape is amazing. The food is amazing. And it's usually a pretty cool bunch of people there. And we just opened up two spots for that tour. So that's coming up September the 8th in Northern Norway.
Somebody says, isn't Northern Norway redundant? Yes, but you can go even more north. Norway is north, but you can go more north.
Right. It's actually in the Arctic where we're going to be.
Wow.
So it's above the Arctic Circle, which is another little treat there.
How fun, yeah. So if people go to discoverthetopfloor.com, they can find out more about it?
It's right on the homepage.
Okay, good.
It's right there.
Excellent. So we have, every month, Chris gives us an assignment, a word that we need to take pictures to illustrate, and people submit those pictures to Flickr, and it's time for a review. What was the word? What was the topic of the month?
The word was eyes. We had a bit of a body parts things, hands and eyes and things. So, people took great pictures, a very creative selection this time. And as usual, I've picked three pictures to talk about here on the show.
This is the craziest idea, talking about photos on the radio. But we're going to do it, folks. Starting
it does
with,
work.
Which one?
First one is by Robert Coakley, Nomad.
And
you might remember several weeks ago we talked about pareidolia, about this how people seeing faces in things.
I love that, and by the way. I love it.
Cars are one of the prime example there. Of course, cars have faces, and that is, I don't know what car that is. Is it? Well, it's a Nomad, apparently. Must be an American brand. That I don't know, but it just has this a bit of a...
Yeah, you guys never had a car like this in Germany, I guarantee you.
We never had Nomads, no. Ours looked different.
That is a 1955 Chevrolet.
It's a Chevrolet, okay.
Yep. Very nice.
And look at those eyes, look at the mouth, look at the grill, like kind of growling at you.
I have a feeling that this actually was somewhat intentional by the car designers.
Of course.
That they kind of wanted it to look like a face, right?
All the cars. I mean, look at cars. They are cute cars and they're aggressive cars. Most of them are aggressive these days.
Yeah. This looks like one of the cars in the Chevron commercials, the talking cars. This is real personality, or from the Pixar Cars movie. I mean, it really has personality here. I love it.
And cars have two faces. They have another face on the back. If you look at the car from the back, it's also looking at you. So those designs are clearly deliberate.
Nice image. And one of the reasons I like this is the color. I really love the orange in this.
Yeah, sticks out.
Yeah.
Second one by Gwyneth CM, titled Who Me?
Who Me?
And it's a photo of her dog.
He's definitely got some personality.
It definitely has some personality. I like the focus on the dog, the background being slightly out of focus. And of course, we are programmed to look into eyes. If there is a pair of eyes in a photo, that's the first thing that we will look at. So, which kind of explains why putting people in your pictures will make those pictures much more interesting, because you just want to look into eyes. That's what we do. That's what we're kind of genetically programmed for. And of course, you look straight into the eyes of the dog, not just because it's eyes, but also because the focus is there and that expression is just priceless.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Good job.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And the last one, the Steve Foster orange eyes is... Well, he writes in the description, okay, first off, what are we looking at? We're looking at a boy, and the boy's holding two halves of an orange in front of his eyes. So he's replacing his eyes with the oranges. And Steve writes, my broken rules for the assignment, the subject is in the center of the photo, plus it was very obviously staged. I also used a telephoto lens for a portrait, cut off the top of his head, and have a tree coming out of the back of his head.
And we still love it.
You know what? I didn't notice any of that because you have these big orange eyes, and it's just a fun picture. It's a kid having fun. It doesn't even matter. If you look at Steve's avatar on this thing, it's a cat with glowing eyes. So he must have something about orange glowing eyes.
That's great. That's
absolutely great. And it really shows, if you have something really interesting in your picture, a pair of eyes or something,
all the rest
doesn't really matter that much anymore. You can break all those rules. Yeah.
The rules are only there to be broken.
I guess.
that's one way to put it. Chris, you gave us a great assignment. Obviously, our photo buffs lived up to the assignment. Now, let's give them another one.
Well, I think we've worn out the body parts thing. Let's move on to stuff that we put on our body parts. Clothing. So next one is shoe.
And singular or shoe plural, or does it matter?
Shoe singular.
Singular.
Okay. Let's see what you guys will make of it. It can mean a lot of different things. So that's. I'm looking forward to those photos.
It's good to have some constraints, believe it or not. Yes. It's hard. In fact, I bet you do believe it, because when you go out and say, I'm going to bring my camera today and walk around and do a photo walk, it's a lot harder than if you say, and I'm going to take pictures of pink things.
Oh, it makes it much more interesting if you go for a little hunt, if you have something in the back of your mind and you want to make something of that. That will give you ideas. That works like a charm.
So that's the point here. There's no prize. There's no award. The best you can hope for is that Chris will mention you on the radio. But you do get the fun of submitting your picture to our Flickr group for approval from all the Flickr group members. There's quite a few of them, more than 10,000 now. It's the Tech Guy group on Flickr.com. Flickr's free. It's a photo sharing site. Used to be Yahoo. And if you have a Yahoo login, that'll still work. But SmugMug now owns it, and I think they're going to make some nice improvements to it. They understand that the whole key to this is that it's a chance for photographers to show their work and get commentary from other photographers. So here's what you do. You take a picture illustrating the word or concept shoe, and then you upload it to Flickr. There's a field for tags. Make sure you put shoe in the tag. And then submit it to the Tech Guy group. You have to be a member, so join the group, then submit it. You could submit up to one picture each week for a total of four. We usually go about a month. Our moderator, Renee Silverman, will say, thank you. We welcome you into the group. And by the way, I never mentioned this, but you have another assignment, which is to go look at other photos in the group. That's the fun of Flickr. It's not just putting something there, but it's participating and commenting and saying, I like this. Oh, this one works for me, or this one didn't work because. Be gentle, but also the criticism is very helpful to all of us. So Flickr is a great place to share your photos, favorite the ones you like. I hope you all participate because it's a lot of fun. It doesn't have to be a fancy camera. Were any of these with a camera phone, Chris?
You mean on the ones on this assignment?
Yeah, we didn't even look. We didn't even look. We don't care.
It doesn't matter.
It's just illustrate shoe somehow. This one's going to be fun. I can think of a lot of things to do with this one. Chris Marquardt at discoverthetopfloor.com. He has a great podcast, Tips from the Top Floor. And don't forget, there are two spaces left for a September trip to the Arctic Circle to see the Northern Lights. Wow. Discoverthetopfloor.com is his website. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, flying in my flying car. Elroy had the beanie, the little antenna beanie, yeah. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Love to hear from you. Give me a ring, and we will talk high-tech. Back to the phones we go. Line 3, Sam, Costa Mesa, California. Hi, Sam.
Why, good afternoon, Leo. I actually think I just answered my own question. I was looking for...
That's why we keep you on hold so long.
Yeah. I knew there was a reason.
Yeah, we figure...
But I found the Netgear Arlo seems to be what I need, which is a Bluetooth, or Wi-Fi rather, two-camera security motion-activated system. Looks like it's doing the whole job that I need. My question instead, since I seem to have decided on that, is we're in a 1,200 square foot two-story condo, and I've got an Asus 3200 router upstairs in a closet.
Yep.
The problem is with these Arlos going downstairs and better coverage also down here, I just bought that router like a year ago. I really don't want to do a net system. Is it better? I found an Asus N300 router, and I was thinking about just using it down here, somehow tying it into the router upstairs. And the other thing I would say is I actually ran an Ethernet cable through my walls with an outlet here at the wall. So, I mean, I can just plug in, if that's possible, too, to get better Wi-Fi coverage down here and also for the Arlos.
Once you have cameras set up, they're usually on the perimeter, right? So they're often challenging to get those on a Wi-Fi network. How big is the total square footage?
1,200 total. Downstairs is...
So you were mentioning the mesh networks. The way those work is a little different than an extension, but each device handles about 1,500 square feet. So in other words, you're well within that's small enough that your single router should be enough. Do you have Wi-Fi issues?
Well, it's just if you go into the kitchen, you'll start to have an issue with it. It's like I say, because I've got that router upstairs in a closet.
Yeah, so that's really probably not the ideal spot for it. One thing you might play with first is putting it somewhere else. I know it's in the closet because that's where the cable modem is or the DSL modem.
Right.
Yeah. But as you point out, you have Ethernet to another spot, so you might try just putting the router where that Ethernet is.
Oh, okay.
Right? And then,
yeah, you're right, because we don't need the Ethernet, or we don't need the router really upstairs that often.
Yeah. And it may be that out in the open, it's going to work better. So Wi-Fi is a fairly high frequency signal. Initial Wi-Fi was at 2.4 gigahertz. The current Wi-Fis also support 5 gigahertz. That's the microwave frequency. And the physics of radio is that the smaller the frequency, the worse the propagation. You know, when you watch TV, those TV analog signals were at 700 megahertz, so way down there. Right. FM and AM also way down. AM's in kilohertz. So that means that those are bigger waves, and they propagate through walls, and that's why AM radio works so well.
Right.
It's why FM is not quite as good. And why TV is not quite as good as that. As you continue to go up the band, it gets worse and worse. So at 2 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz, you know, plaster can stop it. So putting it in a closet is often less than ideal. You almost really, and nobody says this, but Wi-Fi really was designed to be what we call line of sight, that you could actually see the router from the computer. Now, obviously, nobody's got line of sight because we all have upstairs and downstairs, and it's pretty good at propagating. How recent is your router? Is it pretty new? You said it was an
I got it last year.
Yeah.
It's Asus's
are very good. Yeah, they're very good. The 3200 is excellent. Make sure you keep your firmware up to date. That's very important these days with the router. And actually, Asus has added some mesh-like features to their routers. So you may, if you don't, there are other options if merely moving the router down to that Ethernet drop doesn't help, which would be to get there are a couple of things you could do. You could get another access point on that Ethernet. Does the Ethernet plug into the router or plug into the cable modem?
Plugs into the cable modem, and then I routed it into the router.
Yeah, so
and
now
then
you're
I also ran one downstairs for like the Roku.
Yeah, that's going to work less than ideally unless the cable modem is a router as well. It must be.
Oh, okay.
It wouldn't work at all.
Yeah.
So what happens is cable or DSL phone lines coming into the house hits what we call a modem, which says, oh, I understand how to turn that into bits. Now, that you could plug one computer into because it has an IP address and only one computer can use that IP address. That's why people started buying routers, because they wanted more than one device in the house. So the cable modem has to go into a router. What a router does is take that single internet address and allow you to have multiple devices attached to it. It gives them their own local address that connect to that single address. So everything has to be behind a router. It may be, and often is the case, cable companies and the DSL companies know that people don't understand this, so they often give you a router modem that does that. So if you're...
No, I've got a killer modem. I bought a high-quality modem.
Oh, all right. You bought it, and it's not a router. Then that Ethernet is not going to be really working, because it's one internet address shared to two different things, the router and then whatever's on that Ethernet. So this is a very good idea now. Put that router on that Ethernet. You need your Wi-Fi router on that Ethernet. It may be good enough to solve the whole problem. It certainly will be better than the closet. If it's not, then your other option is maybe put it back up in the closet. You should connect that Ethernet cable to the router, though, not to the cable modem. It should come out of the router. Because the router is going to be what's sharing all the access. And then
I run into a weird thing if I run another Ethernet cable from the existing router downstairs to another router? Will it get all weird, or does that?
No, what you do, though, is you turn off routing on that second device. You don't want what's called double NAT, double network address translation. But all of these devices can go into what they call bridge mode, where they're no longer a router. They're merely a Wi-Fi access point. And give it a different name and a different password. It's a separate system. In fact, that works fine. And that way you could have – it's kind of like mesh, except that you get full speed to both of those. And they won't really conflict with each other, especially because you have a modern router that is tri-band. They'll be able to negotiate it so that they're not conflicting with one another.
Super.
Yeah, you're in pretty good shape. Yeah, the fact that you have that Ethernet in the wall is a huge benefit to you. That's a great thing to have. It's funny because really these are fairly networking is advanced. That's advanced IT, right? That's the guy who's got the big keychain, the nerdy glasses, the pocket protector comes around and says, "Yeah, you know, I gotta fix your computer." That's high end stuff. But somehow, because all of a sudden we all have high speed internet in our house and we have many devices, we're suddenly doing networking. We got switches, we got routers, we got to understand how this stuff works, and it's complicated. A lot of the time, the internet service provider understands that and just says, "Look, we're gonna make this easy. We're just gonna do it all for you. Don't even think about it. It just works." And that for a lot of circumstances will be adequate. But often, if you get fancy, and we're all getting fancy with cameras and doorbells and everything, all these internet connected devices, suddenly it starts to break down. And that's what's really created this market for mesh, which is a little bit fancier and a little bit better in a lot of situations and crowded internet situations. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. Flying cars. I got to add flying cars to the list. Yeah. I'm going to be on a one-man crusade to get Silicon Valley to give us flying cars. Let's just skip right over the self-driving vehicles on the road and go right to flying cars. Think how much municipalities would save if they didn't have to pave the roads. Think how big, great it'd be for bicyclists and pedestrians. We could walk around without fear of being clobbered, except maybe from above. Yeah, but it happens fast, and you don't. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Tim in Franklin, Ohio. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
You'll forgive me. I'm drinking from a Michigan mug. I am
not a sports fan, but...
Oh, good. Okay. Carol noticed that I have a mug from the Ohio State University, and so she brought me a mug from the Michigan University. It's university, right? University, U of M. Yeah. What can I do for you today?
Well, I'm calling about... first of all, I'm calling from the back of the room here. I've been watching the show for many years, and I appreciate everything you do for us.
You're in the room? Oh, okay.
I'm in the back of the class. Yeah.
Oh, you're in the chat room. What's your chat room handle?
Oh, I don't participate in the chat too often, but I heard you mention
you can be one of the quiet kids in the back of the room. Although it's those quiet ones I always worry about.
Very true. I heard you mention in one of the breaks that you're not eating today. I too am a faster, and I enjoy a lot of your conversations with Phil from All Turtles.
Yeah, Phil Libin is an amazing inspiration in that. He used to be, I never thought he was fat, but he was round. He was good looking round, but that now he's really thin. Now, I should say right up front that as soon as I say the word fasting, people's brains go crazy with it. But I did check with my doctor, and you should always do that. And really what it is, and I think this is a safer thing to say, is I skip meals, right? I just skip a number of meals at a time. Like five. But that's just skipping meals, right? So that way people don't get so crazy if you say that. If you say fasting, they think, oh, man, you're killing your body or something like that. But, yeah it's worked well for me when I can do it. The problem is it's easy to fall off the wagon.
It is, yeah. I have lost a total of 214 pounds.
What? Congratulations. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, a combination of keto and fasting, and so.
Tim, you must feel so good. That is amazing.
I do, yeah. And my wife and I have started a Instagram page just for our keto journey.
Oh,
and
tell me what it is. I want to follow you.
It's keto_saved us.
Keto is K-E-T-O, by the way, _saved us. And he's talking about is another it's not fast, but another diet routine that involves eliminating carbohydrates to the point where you go into something called ketosis. And I've tried that. It didn't work for me, but not a lot of geeks like that. See, geeks, in fact, the first person I ever heard of doing that was Cory Doctorow, who's one of my favorite smart geeks. And he says it's just biohacking. We like to hack things, including our bodies. So by eliminating carbohydrates, your body goes into a different mode of glucose production called ketosis. Be very careful. That's one to definitely check your doctor with your doctor before embarking on and reading as much as you can. And this is not a show where I want to recommend diets. I'm not a physician. But
I understand. But I've enjoyed some of your kind of off-the-record conversations with Phil and far.
Yeah, and it was Steve Gibson who told me about keto first. And, of course, the people have heard of the paleo diet. That's another kind of keto-style diet where you eliminate simple carbs. Yeah, great. Well, good on you. Has your wife lost weight as well?
Yeah, she's lost about 64.
Oh, you guys must feel so good. And I hear a little baby in the background. Now, you're going to feed that baby, though, right?
Yeah, they're dumping out their building blocks here.
I hear the Legos.
They're the classic Lincoln Logs, actually.
Oh, even better. I love those Lincoln Logs. Yeah. So what can I do for you there, Tim?
Well, I have a question about my Time Machine backups.
Okay.
I have it set up on a Synology disk station, 6 terabytes, RAID, nice little box, and it will complete the backup occasionally, and then other times it says backup failed, and I click the little red circle with the eye in it, and it says that the credentials are not correct. So I give it the right credentials to Synology.
This is something the Synology does. I'm not sure, but let me. Are you using SSL? Are you using crypto? Using Let's Encrypt certificates or something like that?
No, it's just the standard Time Machine backups.
But you're doing it onto the Synology. And is the Synology mounted locally, or how is it seeing the Synology?
It's on the network.
Okay, so it's mounting the Synology locally.
Right. It's a NAS device. And as soon as I give it the credentials, it'll back up and everything's fine. And, you know, you're working for a little bit and it wants to do another incremental. And that one might work. And then a little bit later.
Which credentials? The Synology credentials?
Yeah, the login for the Synology.
All right. So what I was talking about, and maybe related, I use a Synology from remotely over the internet, so you want to use, obviously, encryption, SSL, HTTPS, and I use Let's Encrypt certificates. Those renew every 90 days, I think, but even more often than that, I will have to renew my Synology credentials for some reason, and I assumed it was related to the Let's Encrypt expiring, but maybe now, I wonder if this is the same, you're experiencing the same thing I am. Scooter X in our chat room has a post on the Synology forums that kind of addresses this, making Time Machine work. And actually, the name of the post might be relevant to you, Tim. It's Time Machine, Making It Work, Learn From My Suffering. So apparently there are some issues. He is using just a file share, just as you are. And let me see, it's a step-by-step. I don't know if he mentions this periodically losing the credentials. I mean, that really is suffering if it doesn't work without having to re-log in every 5 minutes. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll put a link in the show notes to this particular Synology post. I think it's a very good step-by-step on doing what you want to do. I use Time Machine locally. Time Machine is an Apple-provided backup solution that, frankly, is a bit of a kludge anyway. It will be replaced, I'm sure, in the next year or so, and I'll tell you why that is in a second. But for now, Time Machine works by making hard links, sim links to files. It's kind of cool because it allows you – it's got a cool user interface. It allows you to go back to previous versions of a file, which is really nice. It must work over the network because Apple actually used to offer a Time Machine-based network-attached storage solution. with their Airport Extreme. They don't do that anymore. It should work with a Synology. If you Google Time Machine, learn from my suffering in Synology, I'm sure you'll find this post. I would go through this step by step here and see if it works. I've been very happy with Time Machine, but ultimately it's going to be replaced because it isn't a very, it's actually behind the scenes kind of ugly. And the good news is Apple has switched to the APFS, a new file system that does snapshotting, which is the right way to do what Time Machine does. And it can do it much more efficiently and much more reliably. And that will, in the long run, I think, solve a lot of these problems. Tim, that's the best I can do. I hope I'm not much help, but maybe this post will give you some ideas for ways you can make that work. 8888 Ask Leo. If you have a solution, of course, we're always glad to get help from the kids in the back of the class, silent or not. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. TechGuyLabs.com is the website. We'll put a link there to this Synology post. Maybe that'll help Tim, and maybe you can help too. Give us a ring. See if Charger recognizes Sven. Leo Laporte. I'm getting dizzy. The tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, you can help out with some of our other callers. We love the help. 888-827-5536. We go to line 4, Kate in Toledo, Ohio. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Leo. here.
Well, it's nice to talk to you.
Well, I have a really neat story to share with you. We have a family member who turned 90 a few weeks ago. Uh-huh. And before this, her telephone landline, the wires were real bad, and they finally talked her into getting one of those cell phone kind of things, but it's a, you know, it's got a cell phone box and a telephone, so it looks like a regular
landline.
And with it came free Wi-Fi.
Nice. Here. Yeah, because basically it's internet telephone, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't. So anyway, we have this lady with Wi-Fi, and she has a lot of kids and a lot of family, and they come visit a lot.
Oh.
And now
does she live alone?
Yeah.
At the age of 90, that's remarkable. That's great.
And she's lived in the same house since 1953 when she got married.
It's wonderful that you can help her stay independent like that. That's great.
Well, the thing, this gets really better because having Wi-Fi in a house like that, when the grandkids come over and the kids come over, in fact, she just became a great grandma.
Wow.
And so one of her kids decided to give her an iPad for her birthday.
Wonderful.
So now, I know this lady real well. We've traveled together on and off for years, and she loves the crossword puzzle.
Me too.
And I'm sitting there with my iPad, and we do the crossword puzzle.
Does she do the New York Times puzzle? Is that the one she does?
No. Actually, she lives in the Detroit area.
Oh, all right.
And the Detroit Free Press, and it comes and goes. Well, that's a whole different thing.
Okay.
But she loves the puzzles, and we do them together. And I'm using the iPad, and I find, you know, Google's my help here.
Of course.
And I found where answers are and how to look things up. And so I was asked about what kind of iPad I use. And I told her, your mother will not use an iPad. Well, I'm happy to say I was wrong. What happened is now when the kids visit her, they have great fun.
The kids love it. They go, hey, Grandma, give me your iPad.
Yeah. And she sees, because the family's on Facebook and other things.
Oh, she can keep up with them. Yeah.
Yeah, and she sees the pictures of all the new, and knows knows everything that's going on. She's always, always had a great, sharp memory, and she's the go-to person in the family for who's where and doing what. And now she can follow these kids on Facebook. And also, now with the iPad, this child of hers, who is obviously not a child,
she's probably older than me.
Well, she signed her up for Facebook because we have...
You know, we knock Facebook, and I knock them all the time for privacy and violations and all that. But one should never forget what a boon, what an amazing thing Facebook is for people to keep in touch with their family and friends. And it's a huge value. It's huge.
Yeah, I'll make a comment about that after I'm done with the story, if you have time. But anyway, so Grandma's now, or great-grandma, is on Facebook.
Nice.
But only when the kids come over, which she has enough kids and grandkids there, it's every day. And so she celebrated her first great-grandchild on Facebook.
Oh, man.
Holding a picture of this. In fact, her family, the great-grandchild... Oh, I get excited about this. I'm losing track. Anyway.
It's so cool. You know, my mom's 85.
Oh my,
she's going to be 86 next January. She loves her iPad. She uses an iPad Pro. She also has an iPhone. And we use it to talk on FaceTime. She actually is not that big on Facebook, but she uses it for email, for browsing. She's a big knitter. She gets knitting patterns there. I think more and more people really, instead of getting we get so many tales of woe from people who are trying to use a Windows machine or a Macintosh. For most people, an iPad is a great choice.
It is. And another quick comment, the iPad they showed for seniors to be, I'm 74, and the iPad they showed for seniors, I would be insulted. But that's me, because it looks like it's for a baby.
It's not from Apple, I'm sure. Apple's stuff is designed for every age. There's no specific age.
And I saw your mom and heard her.
Yes, she was on our... We have a show about the iPad called iOS Today, and Mom is one of our regulars. We love having her on. And she talks about how she uses the iPad, the Amazon Echo. This is a very exciting time for as people get older, as I myself get older, mobility becomes an issue, staying in touch becomes an issue. Sometimes we're housebound, and these technologies can transform your life.
They can.
Yeah,
and I'm a witness to that.
Well, I am so glad you. I am out of time, but I'm so glad you called, Kate. It's what a great story and an inspiration. I hope for people who are listening. You know, the iPad starts now at $329. It's gotten much more affordable. It used to be pretty pricey, but that new low-cost iPad they just released is fantastic. It's not in any way stripped down. It's a great product. Kate, a real pleasure. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Nice story to do the show with. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And if you're looking for the best crossword puzzles on the iPad, I don't know about the free press, but the New York Times app is an amazing app for the iPad. Highly, highly recommended. And I was just looking, and I see it's also available in the Microsoft store for Windows, because I'm getting that new Windows Surface Go, which is a iPad-sized Windows machine. It has a pen and everything. It'd be perfect for doing crossword puzzles. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Line one is Bob in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you feeling today?
I'm doing pretty good. I've tried to call the last few weeks, never did get in. I was kind of surprised I got through today.
Bravo. Actually, just a little programming note. I'm going to keep answering calls for another hour. So even after the show ends, we're recording ahead for my vacation in the fall. So this is a good time to call. We're going to take a lot of extra calls. Well, what can I do? I'm glad you got through. What can I do to help you?
Well, I'm not a geek, but I've been following you since you and Patrick were on TV, and I really appreciate what you do.
Well, don't sell yourself short. If you've been listening that long, you probably are a geek by now.
It's not sinking in. But I've got two questions for you. One is LastPass. I'm one of these guys that has 80 passwords stored on an Excel spreadsheet.
Yes.
And I know that's not a good idea.
No. Well, so, you know, before I poo-poo that, we talk a lot about passwords and stuff. Sometimes people say, well, I would just like to write it down. And I've actually made a joke because I went to the drugstore and I saw they sell books that say on the front of the book, my passwords. And then it's a little notepad. But if you feel like your home is secure, which it probably is, having a little notebook next to your computer that's got your passwords in it, that's not a bad idea. Now, what you're doing is a little worse, believe it or not, because it's on the computer. And so the notebook sitting next to the computer could only be accessed by somebody breaks into your home. If it's on your computer, they can get to it by breaking into your computer. So that's the risk. If you were to print out that Excel spreadsheet and paste it up next to your computer, I'd be fine with that. The problem is also a little inconvenient because, remember, we have passwords on our phones. We have multiple computers. We go to work. We go around. What you don't want to do is carry those passwords around with you, because if you lose your wallet or your book, you're out of luck. So
this is the problem
is we have passwords. We need to keep track of them. You're doing at least one step better than a lot of people who just say, well, I'm going to use the same password all the time.
Well, that's my problem. I've got at least half of the 80 that are very similar. And let's just, for argument's sake, say it's password 123.
Yeah, a lot of people do their birth date and then they change a few letters at the beginning or the end. That's super common and it's not good.
Well, I really like the idea that LastPass can generate these complicated, random passwords. But I can't figure out how to do that when you've already got a password set on a website. And I don't, their replies via chat, I'm a premium member, but their replies via chat seem sort of robotic and they don't answer the phone. So, you're my only hope, Obi-Wan.
So it's actually easier than it looks, but you have to know what to do. And I do this all the time. If you go to LastPass's help desk, they actually describe this for you.
What? I know.
And it's still too hard.
One of the
things that you need to know ahead of time, LastPass is a sponsor, we should mention, and a password vault, the one I use. There are many. Anything that you use, LastPass, 1Password, RoboForm AI, Keeper, I can go on and on. There's dozens of them. Any one of those is better than almost anything else you're doing, because they'll remember these passwords for you in a secure vault that no one can get into but you. It's kind of like that book that's in your house. They'll generate better passwords because they're completely random, something you wouldn't want to use if you had to memorize them, but you don't. So that's the point. So here's one way to do it. You can go, if you go to your vault on the browser, that's probably the easiest.
I'm in there.
Yeah. And if you are looking at a particular password, if you hover your mouse pointer over the entry, you'll see a wrench.
Yes.
You open it, and there's a change password button. You click that. But even easier than that, go to a site that you want to change the password. Go to the change password button works by doing this in an automated fashion, but it doesn't work 100% of the time. So it's good to know how to do this manually. You go to a change password. So I'm on Netflix, and you know what? I have a very bad Netflix password. It's my driver's license number or something. It's something obvious. It's my mother's maiden name. There's a good one. So I go to Netflix, and there in the settings, in the account settings, change password field. You have to write your old password, and then there's two blanks for a new one. At that point, you go to the LastPass icon. You have it on your browser or whatever. 1Password does this the same way. And you say, generate password. It will fill in those generate and fill. It will fill in the new password. You don't even need to look at it. You click OK. And the next thing that happens is LastPass or 1Password or Keeper or any of these will say, hey, you just changed your password. You want me to update the password in the vault to reflect that? You say yes, and you're done.
Yes, I think I've done that, but some of the sites don't have a change password. Should I just go to forgot my password?
And yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you know, even one password's not magic. Even one password can't change your site to a password if the site doesn't have a change password page.
Yeah.
That's a little weird. But I think you're right. I think some sites, instead of doing that, say, oh, just use forgot my password. And it's effectively the same thing. And you'll do it in the browser. LastPass will notice that you've changed it. That's the beauty of this. It will say, oh, you changed your password. Do you want me to update it? Occasionally the web is a free-flowing ball of weirdness. And sometimes people do strange things on their websites that LastPass can't see. So it's always a good idea to copy the new password just in case. If you don't get the box that says update your password, you can then manually go in and edit it. But almost always it will just say, hey, you updated your password. You want me to update it? And you say yes.
Okay.
I copy it because then, and it's, by the way, worst case scenario, it doesn't do it. You just do the I forgot again and get a new one.
Right. Hey, I've got one more question. I drive an Acura. I've got an iPhone. I did the last 11.4 update, and all of my contacts don't appear on my phone Bluetooth in the car anymore. I took it to Acura, and they said, you know, we thought it was our equipment for a while. We were replacing it, and they said, no, it's Apple.
It's not Apple.
How do we get them to do that? So you need to call Apple.
No, it's not. Well, maybe it is, but it's almost certainly not. So this car, as you know, when you first add a Bluetooth phone, there will be a second step that says, can I copy your directory? The iPhone will pop up a thing that says, do you want me to allow this and do it? If you update, but you didn't delete the phone in the Acura, you won't have permissions to do that. So there's a couple of ways to do that. The best way would be just to start over. Delete the phone. Forget the phone. You may also, I've noticed this on a number of cars, the cars have a limited amount of space for storing numbers. They may handle multiple phones, but after a while, they run out of space for numbers. So I frequently have to delete the old phone's directory, the old contact list, as well as the phone. So I don't know about an Acura, but you should look in the Bluetooth settings. See, you know what I would do is delete everything and repair that one phone that you want to use. And then if your wife gets in the car and says, what about me? Say, well, honey, something happened. We have to redo this. Frankly, Bluetooth needs that frequently. Bluetooth's a mess. I wouldn't blame Acura or Apple. Apple's trying to protect your privacy. So they do require explicitly that you say, yes, I allow this device to copy my phone book. That's what's happening here. You need to start over so you can do that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Just a few minutes left in the show, but once again, I'm going to continue to record calls after the show for another 45 minutes. So if you're on the line now, stay on the line. If you haven't called in and you're trying to get in, and like our last caller, sometimes it's hard to get in, this is a great time. Because I will be continuing to take calls for another 45 minutes. We're recording ahead. I'm going to take vacation in about a month. So we're recording ahead because I like to give you a fresh show, right? You don't want to hear reruns. Fresh show. In fact, I'm going to do – we'll record a couple of weekends. And then Rich DeMuro from KTLA is going to come in. He's their tech guy. He's great. I know you've heard him before. He's my regular fill-in guy, and he's going to do a couple of weekends. So we got you covered in the month of September. It's important, actually, to have Rich because I mustn't have been thinking when I planned this vacation last year, because September is the month Apple usually announces the new iPhone. And I'm going to be, out to sea somewhere when they do that. Fortunately, Rich will be here to tell you all about it. He usually goes to that Apple event, so he's actually a better guy than I am. I haven't been invited to an Apple event since 2010. Don't ask. It's Steve and I. We got a little thing. Gene in North Hollywood, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Leo. Last week you spoke about modems and routers. And
oh,
you
Lord. In the words of James Comey, Lordy.
I don't know anything about technology.
No, you shouldn't have to. This is like high-end geek stuff.
Oh, okay, good. You suggested buy your modem instead of renting it with your internet provider.
Yeah.
Okay. So should I take the modem? I have a wired modem. It goes from the computer.
Who's your internet service provider?
DSL Extreme.
Okay. So they provide you with what's called a DSL modem. Your DSL line comes in on your phone lines. In fact, you've got little filters, right?
I don't have dial-up. I just have a cable with the modem.
Oh, interesting. You have what we call a dry pair, which sounds painful. But all it is your phone line, which is a pair of copper wires, doesn't have telephone on it. It's just got DSL Extreme on it. I'm amazed you could get that because the phone companies don't like that at all.
Oh.
They want you to buy phone service. They hate it. They hate it if you don't buy phone service from them.
But they're connected now. AT&T owns DSL Extreme.
Oh, they did? They bought them?
They're the parent company, I believe.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think.
Oh, they were a longtime sponsor, but I haven't talked to George and the gang in a while. Oh, that's interesting. Well, that would explain why you can get a dry pair.
Oh, okay. Anyway, should I take the modem to the store with me?
I'll be honest with you. When we talk about replacing the modem, we're usually talking about the cable modems.
Oh.
I would not mess with a DSL modem.
Oh, okay.
There's no point. Now, I know you're paying a rental fee.
Right.
But the problem with changing your DSL modem, it's more complicated than changing your cable modem. The DSL modem has built into it a login for your DSL Extreme account. It has all sorts of stuff that you need. I would not mess with it.
Okay, good, because I'm not...
Yeah, you don't want to mess with it. How much is the rent? It's probably not very... DSL Extreme is really affordable.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think they went up, but even that isn't too much. I think it's like $30 a month or something like that.
Yeah, so, see, cable modem companies charge you $10 a month for the modem. At that point, you would be saving a lot of money to buy yours. But I think DSL Extreme does not charge you much for that modem.
Okay. The other half of the question is the router. You suggested last week that there was a router. Now, you tell us to buy, well, I'm not going to do it now, but you spoke of buying your own modem to the audience so you wouldn't have to be renting it forever. But when it came to the router, you said buy the router, but then subscribe to this company every month?
No, no.
What was it that you said that the modem keeps...
Yeah, I should really, yourself? I need to be more clear when I talk because... as you know, and because I know you listen, I've talked to you before, Gene, and I love you, Gene. As you know, I when we're talking on the show, sometimes I'm talking to Uber geeks.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I'm talking to normal people. And the advice varies, really. And I should be very clear. You know, occasionally I'll say, well, this is a black diamond tip or something like that. But honestly, sometimes I say things that, because I'm talking to an Uber geek, that makes sense for him. But maybe you don't really want to become a networking expert.
Okay.
I'm guessing you don't.
No.
Stick with what you got. It's working, right?
But I'm supposed to get a router. Is router Wi-Fi? Does that give you Wi-Fi?
You don't have Wi-Fi and you want it?
Well, I want to be able to use other things. For instance, I have a Roku adapter for my TV. I can't use it without a router.
Right.
I have Umer. I can't use that unless I get a router.
That's right. So what the router does is it allows you to use more than one computer or device. Nowadays, it's not just computers. It's doorbells and cameras and all sorts of stuff. More than one of them on that single connection. It shares your connection. So you're just using one computer right now.
Right.
Yeah, that's why you don't need a router. But you want to use more stuff, like your UMA and other stuff, you need to get a router.
I'd like to. Oh, yeah. Okay. So now,
and the router you can get routers that don't do Wi-Fi, and you can get routers that do Wi-Fi. And in your case, I would get one that does Wi-Fi.
Okay. I know you suggested one before. But
there's a couple of recommendations for the Uber geeks who want lots of configuration switches. I like the ASUS routers. But for you, I'm going to recommend something from a company called TP-Link. You can get this on Amazon.
Oh.
It's called their Archer C7. It is like $60.
Okay.
And it is everything you need. Is a very good quality router. How many square feet are you going to be covering on the Wi-Fi?
Everything is right here in front of me.
Yeah.
The computer, then right next to it is a TV and the phone.
So you don't need something that goes miles.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the big expensive routers are designed for, you know, 2,000 square feet. You don't need to worry about that. So get an inexpensive TP-Link Archer router. They make the C9 now. That'd be fine. You don't need to spend a whole lot of money on it. About $40 or $50. Okay. I see the C8 for $77. That'd be a good one.
Oh, okay.
The C8. That'll plug into your DSL modem.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has other connections for other wired things. So if you like being wired on your computer, you can leave it plugged in. You know, it doesn't have to be wireless. It's the other things that might want to be wireless. The Uma probably wants to be wired as well, but you get the choice now. And if you do you have a smartphone yet? I can't remember if you got one.
No, I was one of the crazy people in the whole country.
Yeah, you don't have one, huh?
I'm going to get one, but I don't have it yet.
Well, so when you get one of those, you'll use Wi-Fi on that.
So a router means Wi-Fi? Is that what you're
saying? No.
Oh.
This is why it's crazy. What a router means is a thing that shares internet access. But many routers come with radio transmitters so they can do Wi-Fi as well, but they don't have to. You're going to get the Archer C8, which does have both Wi-Fi and routing together.
Okay, that's good. Okay. Also, you said something about how they don't last long. Within a year, you have to...
No. They usually last about 4 or 5 years. This one will last you a long, good long time. And you're not... They tend to wear out when people who are doing a lot of internet accessing, they get hot. You're not doing that.
Okay.
You'll be fine.
Thank you.
Yay!
I'm so happy after talking.
Gene, I got to remember, stop pushing the high-end geeky stuff. Because Gene's listening, and she doesn't need all that. She just needs the basics.
Like dial up internet.
Yeah. I think I'm checking. I don't think DSL Extreme was bought by AT&T, but it comes in over your AT&T wires. That's probably where the confusion lies. Yeah.
Yeah, because when I tried to use the Uma years ago, I unplugged everything. Everything went off. My phone service went off. Yeah. The DSL went off.
Wow.
I had to use a payphone.
That's terrible.
It was. And they told me that now the cable lines outside and the telephone lines are owned by AT&T. That's why everything went off at once.
Yeah.
I don't want to go through that again.
No. Hey, I'm out of time. Michael Cozio, our musical director, well done, my friend. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. I will keep answering calls for the next 45 minutes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security and Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.